Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyCars.ie, low-cost car insurance specialists. See how much you can save at InsureMyCars.ie.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
Ah, never better. Absolutely brilliant. Got a bit cut out yesterday with the snow like everybody else.
We did, didn't we? Yeah. Couldn't believe it when I woke up.
Oh, it was mad. It was freezing as well. Yeah. It was like, you know, just such a cold snap out of nowhere. But I was actually heading down to, the young lad was playing in a school's final yesterday morning. They won it on penalties in the end, 6-5 on penalties.
Oh, fantastic.
I was heading down to that down in Arklow yesterday morning, and there was lines of traffic from Greystones all the way down as far as Ashford. I'd say about 20 miles of traffic jam heading back towards
traffic,
Dublin.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it was going the other way. But it was brutal. It was really caught us out completely. And sport suffered a little bit, but you didn't suffer because you're over in Goffs at the minute, aren't you?
Yeah, we're in Goffs. We have the 900 series, the Legends, starting today. It's great to be back in Goffs. You know, it really is such a special place. I was in there last night just hitting a few balls and remembering the old times when I was an usher there as a 14-year-old, you know, taking tickets off people, sitting them down into their seats and then sitting on the middle lane on the stairs just watching the snooker mesmerised and hoping one day that I might be out there playing, you know. And then about six years later, there I was out in the middle, not taking tickets off people, but, you know, people coming and buying tickets to come and see me, which was fantastic, you know, amazing. Yeah, great place. So looking forward to today, Reg.
And they've done a bit of work on it as well recently, I believe. It's looking well, cafes and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Actually, they have a hotel here. The clubhouse is calling. They have a lovely restaurant. Derry Clark has the restaurant here. We had a nice meal in here last night. So, I think all the gang are loving it. You know, Stephen Hendry's here, Jimmy White, Dennis Taylor, Tony Knowles. Wow. And Fergal O'Brien as well from Lucan. He's got an invite to play in it. So it's completely sold out. It was sold out in a few weeks. Yeah, it was completely sold out. Standing room only. And, it's going to be on Channel 5. So it's the first time Channel 5 have done this in Ireland. They did one just around on the 29th of December back in Epsom Racecourse, and they loved it. And they're doing another one now today. So hopefully it goes really well, yeah.
What's the format? How is it working over there?
So it's 900 seconds, only 15-minute frames. There's two groups of three. The top two qualify into the semi-final. Yeah, so it's only whoever. It's a bit like the shootout, but a little bit longer.
So it's a one frame format. You play one frame.
It's a one frame format. Yeah, you play. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, 900 seconds, and whoever's in the lead or if the frame is over within the 15 minutes, wins, and then you have got to qualify out of your group. The top two of each group qualify into the semi-finals, and it's all run over in one day. You know, everything will be done by 5 o'clock.
So is the final only 15 minutes long as well?
Yeah, I think the final may be best of three.
Okay.
Or it might be actually one. I don't know. Maybe just one frame, actually.
It might be worth checking out before you go into the competition.
Well, I'll worry about that, Reg, if I get there.
You're obviously not thinking you're going to get past the first round.
I'll get past the first round, all right. Don't worry about that.
Well, if you can't beat Dennis,
it's only because I'm playing Tony Knowles.
Dennis's glasses must be like the bottom of milk bottles at this stage.
Yeah. I might need them myself, actually.
They're all in good form anyway, all of the seniors. I mean, they must love going around on that tour.
They do. They love it. You know, it's very successful. You know, the one, the World Championship that's held straight after, when the World Championship is at the Crucible, we have the World Seniors Championship straight after, and that may be on Channel 5 this year. But yeah, it's been very successful. And there's only a couple of them a year, but it'd be nice if it grew and had a few more, but it's great to be back in Ireland. It's great to be back in Goffs, you know. Mm. This is where it sort of really all started for me, and I got some great fond memories, and it'll be great coming down the stairs back into the crowd here today. And indeed for Fergal O'Brien as well, you know, who's retiring this year.
Yeah.
So it'll be a great special moment for him and his family as well. So that'll be quite nice, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing, Fergal O'Brien retiring. I know the name has been around forever, there's no question about it, but
yeah.
You know, he didn't reach the heights of you with the World Championship and everything else, but he has been an amazing snooker servant from Ireland as well over the years.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. He won the British Open. That was his own Ruankin tournament. He lost in the final of the Masters, if you remember, to Paul Hunter when he was 7-2 up. I mean, that was one of our Triple Crown events, and that would have been his greatest achievement had he had managed to win that. But no, he's been a great servant. He's doing some great work coaching as well. He's putting a little bit back into the game. And also, he's joined the Eurosport broadcasting team as well. So he's doing a bit of commentary for Eurosport, which is great as well. So he's starting off there. And yeah, he's been a great lad, Fergal. And I've enjoyed, you know, my battles and times with him over the years. We've had some great times, great laughs, and, you know, good fun playing for Ireland, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. Mm. Well, look forward to hearing how that goes on over the weekend. Great to see that it's sold out.
Yeah.
Plenty happening in other sports as well. I suppose the main bit of news was John O'Shea and the temporary role.
It's a bit surprising, isn't it?
Wasn't it? Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere. I don't understand it, to be honest. Obviously, they must be waiting for somebody else, a bigger name, that if he's only sort of introduced as interim, or to just introduce him as interim to see how he'll do for the first few games, maybe, you know?
But that wouldn't make sense, would it?
Like, it doesn't make sense. No. No, it doesn't make sense at all. I think the only thing that makes sense is that they're waiting for somebody else to finish.
They have a name. They must have another name.
They must have another name. Yeah. Because you don't just name an interim coach as an interim, because that doesn't show much confidence in the guy straight away. You know, I think it's been a bit of a mess, to be honest. You know, the way they've handled it, the people that they've interviewed, and the people that sort of turned it down as well. You know, the likes of Carsley and Coleman. Yeah. You know, so it's a bit strange, a little bit strange. Maybe they don't have the money. I don't know.
Maybe you'd imagine if John O'Shea was going to become the manager that they'd just announce it, because then it would be done and dusted. Yeah. It doesn't feel that there's that level of confidence in him. Now, I mean, I don't know whether he'd be good enough or not. I mean, to me, that would be...
The only thing about it, Reg, is that what's his form, you know? What's his sort of coaching experience, you know, at the high level, you know? And would he be able to compete with other coaches, you know, tactically? He's got a very young team. It'd be a very, very tough job for him. You know, the first job on his own, it'd be very, very tough. There's no doubt about that, you know? Yeah. I mean, I know he's been a great player. He's been a great server at Manchester United. He's had a great career, you know, Champions League winner and all that. But that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to, like, be successful as a manager, you know? So, yeah. But he has all the ingredients. He has the experience, but as a coach, it might be a little bit different. But look, if they're only putting him in for the short term to see how he get on, or they're, as I said, they're waiting on another big name probably to come in who's already in a job, that may be the case, Reg. You know?
Do you think, I know Paddy McCarthy's coming in as assistant coach, but they've announced as well bringing in Brian Kerr. So, and that was a bit of a kind of a left field one as well. Maybe is he being brought in as the senior statesman kind of advisor?
I would say so.
To O'Shea to keep it, you know,
absolutely.
If that was to happen, because Brian Kerr is highly respected by the people in the know in football, because his knowledge is amazing and everything else. And okay, he had his own experiences and all that kind of stuff, but he is highly respected. That might work if you had O'Shea and McCarthy kind of doing the day-to-day on the pitch style stuff with a guidance, like almost like a director of rugby. We have it a lot in rugby where you'd have a director of rugby overseeing the coach and staff. Maybe they're looking at that model.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Brian Kerr, I thought, was a short change from the FAI, you know, when he was a manager there, you know. I don't think they treated him fairly. I've got great respect for him. A lot of people do. he's got great knowledge, you know, great experience, and that can only be a good thing for the likes of for John O'Shea. There's no doubt about that, you know. And I think the proof will be in the pudding. Let's see how it goes. I mean, they have a tough job in any way. They've got a lot of young players, young talented players, but maybe not like the sort of pool of players that maybe Jack Charlton could pick from. But, you know, there's definitely young talented players there that they can work with and build with and hopefully get some good results, because, you know, we need some good results for Ireland, because, you know, the last few years have been sort of terrible, really, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, hopefully that group, and Glenn Whelan is involved as well. So there's football knowledge there. There's no question about it.
I think
the supporters, they just want it to be over now in this stage, and something to be announced and a little bit more permanent that they can get behind, because I think they will support the decisions that are made. It's just they're kind of in limbo at the moment. The supporters, they don't know what's happening, and it's not a great place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Totally agree. Yeah. Totally agree.
Speaking of stopgaps and bits and things going on, I see Ten Hag is kind of saying with United that he's not concerned. There's billionaires coming in and kind of overseeing stuff. What do you make of what's going on in United at the minute?
I like that Jim Ratcliffe. There's no doubt about that. I think he's going to shake things up there at United. You know, he's already sort of bringing people in, the right people in at board level, which is good.
Yeah.
But Ten Hag will be looking over his shoulder. You know, I mean, results, and particularly the result there the other day wasn't very, very good. It sort of come to a little bit of a sort of run that they had, you know. But to lose the Fulham at home, you know, it's sort of, I think that sort of shows and highlights, you know, the sort of the frailties of the team, you know, and maybe even Ten Hag's sort of coaching. Now, I know he needs staff, he needs new players, you know, there's no doubt about that. And some of the players aren't playing for him. I mean, Rashford has been terrible, you know, there's no doubt about that. There's obviously issues there with him. I think he'd be looking over his shoulder. I think, you know, dangerous times for Ten Hag now. I think if he doesn't get some decent results between now and the end of the season, maybe the FA Cup might be his only sort of respite, the way it was for Alex Ferguson back in all those years ago, in 89, was it? That it may be his only respite, but other than that, I think he might be a dead man walking.
What about,
you know,
tomorrow,
towards the
then,
end of the season,
you know, with this big the derby on tomorrow,
with the derby,
that could go horribly wrong, being in City, and
it could too,
and City getting form again, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, as a United fan, I'm looking forward to the match in a way, but with a lot of sort of trepidation as well, you know, that you know, the form they're in, and of course, Haaland, you know, he scored 5 goals the other day.
Yeah.
I mean, if they do it, if they do a destruction job on United, you know, it could be.
Do you think that could be
the
end?
Well, it could be. I don't think so.
No.
I think they might see him out till the end of the season. But I think he might be a dead man walking if the results don't pick up, you know, and they don't, which I don't think they will, get into the Champions League, you know.
We'll have to see. Yeah, I mean,
a cup run. That's all he can hope for. But they've got Liverpool at home as well. I mean, that's not going to be, you know, that's going to be another tough one. And the way they're playing, I don't fancy them beating Liverpool at home. So, but the next few weeks, Reg, will tell a lot, I think, about Ten Hag and about Manchester United.
Well, you've been hanging around over in Goffs there. Have you been watching any of the golf? Lowry and McIlroy.
I haven't seen any of it, to be honest, you know. Been too busy practicing, Reg.
Yeah, no, they're going okay. Lowry and McIlroy, you'll be glad to hear they're both 8 under. 11 under is holding the lead at the minute, Bud Cawley. They're in good position, you know, 8 under, both of them. It'd be nice to see Shane Lowry. He's kind of had a bit of a quiet period.
Yeah, a bit of a lean period. Yeah, I think he's fallen outside the top 50 now, hasn't he? Which sort of excludes him from, you know, the guarantees of all the big tournaments. So he's sort of hanging on for sort of sponsors' invitations into a lot of these big tournaments. So, he could do with a really good run and get back into that top 50 and see him regular playing in the big events. You know, it's very important for him.
Yeah, he hasn't won a tournament since the BMW in 2022. So I'd like to see him getting a bit of a run of it, because I suppose people are starting to question that a little bit. Okay, so telling me it's sold out, people can't rock up and get in?
Well, people, I think it's standing room only. So it just depends on how many they're going to let in standing. But yeah, it'll be fantastic. It starts on Channel 5 at 12 o'clock today. And yeah, looking forward to it. Well, if people want to come along, I'm sure they can pay in and just stand, like, you know. But yeah, it'd be great. It'd be a fantastic experience. Yeah.
Who are you playing first?
I'm in the group with Jimmy White and Tony Knowles.
Oh, very good. Yeah, how is Tony Knowles?
Yeah.
He's still got the white suit.
He's still got the white suit. Yeah, he was paid seven fella, wasn't he, back in the 80s?
Yeah. do you remember, was it Dumb and Dumber when they turned up with the suits, with the pale blue suits and the white suit with the frills on the front? Yeah, that was a bit of Tony Knowles.
Yeah.
You can tell I said that. Okay. All right, Ken, listen, good luck.
He wouldn't get on page 77 now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, listen, it's great chatting to you.
You too, Reg.
Good luck in the tournament. Try and find out the format so that if you do get to the final, you know what you have to do.
I will do, I'll just wait until we'll concentrate on the group standings for us. You know?
Exactly, yeah. Get out of your group.
Yeah.
There's nothing but positives for me when I'm watching them. I watched them so carefully last week. I was at the game and I was just watching the way they're holding themselves and the way they're walking around the pitch, and you can just tell that they know what they're at. Their ability is there. But for me, I think I've been most impressed with Crowley, I have to say. I just feel the way... Now, they haven't been flawless performances, don't get me wrong, but just the way that he stepped up, the pressure that was on his shoulders coming into this championship, the way he stepped up, the way he seems to be guiding that team, his ability, his kicking ability is brilliant. He looks like a player beyond his years, if you know what I mean, or that has been playing at that level for longer than he has. Have you been impressed with him yourself?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's easy to overlook because Ireland have been so dominant that, like, we've lost 26 and we've lost the greatest out half we've ever had, and Jack Crowley slotted in seamlessly. And it's a funny one. Like, I don't know if it's because it's a Munster-Leinster thing, but a lot of people seem to be honing in on, like, the kind of couple of mistakes he's making and kind of overlooking the fact that, like, he's piloted his team to three really comprehensive victories. And as you said, they haven't been flawless, but I don't think even his biggest supporters would claim that. But I agree, I think he's slotted in really well. He's added a bit of personality to it without dominating. I think, you know, we saw the first night, in the first half of the first game against France, he maybe tried a couple of things that were ill-advised. Since then, I think he's been playing, you know, really, really well. His kicking has improved, obviously, last weekend. That was an important part to iron out. Now, as I said earlier, the two next weeks are the two big tests, especially in Twickenham. Like, he hasn't really been put into a dogfight yet. Ireland have been very comfortable. So if England can make it difficult and can make it a tough game, I'll be interested to see how he responds. But I couldn't agree more. Like, he's kind of taken what was a position slightly up for grabs where he was the favourite, and I saw Ronan O'Gara saying this during the week, and he's kind of like nailed himself on. Like, the idea that anyone will be starting other than Jack Crowley for the foreseeable future seems unlikely given how seamlessly he slotted in. So I agree with you completely. That's probably been the biggest kind of impressive thing for me, is just the Johnny Sexton void. Now, I know the competition hasn't been that strong, but, like, it's been seamless. And we always thought when Sexton retired there could be some huge drop off, but at the moment, at least, it's looked really, really good.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. I don't know why people are looking for the negative in these performances. I mean, when Johnny Sexton, and he would be the very first one to admit this, when he started out, he wasn't flawless. He you know, he had to find his way into
that. Oh, exactly, And his kicking off the tee as well in his first, like, World Cup in 2011, he lost his place to O'Gara. I think people might look back at it rose into glasses as if Johnny was Johnny in the get-go, but I think Jack Crowley's playing better now than Johnny Sexton was when he started with Ireland. I think that's being overlooked. I do think it's coming down to a bit of a Munster kind of rivalry, because it's a lot of Leinster fans saying to me anyway, oh, but he did this, he did that, like, and I'm like, but he's playing really well, like, so yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut across you, but
no, you're fine. I mean, I agree with you entirely. I mean, there's a lot of people there making those comments that maybe don't have the knowledge. They might be newcomers to the game, let's call them. It's easy to find fault when you don't realise just the enormous amount of pressure that's on a 10's shoulders. And you made a point as well about how maybe he tried a couple of things that weren't advisable, but funnily enough, my attitude to that would be, don't take that little bit of rawness, that ability to try something different, that want to try something different, don't take that out of them, because when they do work, that's what unlocks a defence, that's what cracks a team. You want your 10 to do a little bit of the unusual or unorthodox. If we go back to just being a robotic 10, it's too easily read. Look at as I said to you before, Finn Russell. You don't know what he's going to do next, and that's the brilliance of him, and that's what makes him the best 10 in the competition at the moment, in my opinion. But he doesn't have the pack around him that can provide him with the quality of ball that arguably Crowley does. So no, I'm all over that. And then the other good addition from an outcome from that game was Frawley moved into that fullback position quite easily. He's not Keenan, there's no doubt about that, but he did well.
Yeah, I thought he played really well, like especially because the ball didn't like kind of go his way in the first half until like the last minute or two. So, you know, in a situation like that, the player could be a little tentative potentially. But in particular in the second half, when the game actually did get into a kind of a tight enough affair on the scoreboard, I thought he slotted in really well at second receiver on a couple of occasions when Ireland got go forward ball again. Like, he's not the long-term answer at fullback or the short-term answer really even. I think it's only because of the injuries to Jimmy O'Brien and Mac Hansen that he's going there. But for a guy who's been shuttled around a lot, funnily enough, playing well at fullback could be a blessing and a curse, because I think ultimately he wants to be an out-half. I think his route into being a top player is probably at out-half, but the more he shows in other positions, certainly the more Leo Cullen is going to feel vindicated in the way he's been picking him, saying, look at the way he settled in at 15, giving us a second playmaker. That's why I view him like that. But yeah, from his own perspective, it was a really assured performance. I thought he was brilliant, because one of the big question marks was if Hugo Keenan isn't fit, and it appears he'll be fit for the England game, but we won't know. We'll take some of those reports with a pinch of salt, I feel, because we injury reports from the Irish team sometimes can be a little murky. So if he goes to England and has to play at fullback, that'll be a major test, because it looks like Freddie Stewart is going to be back in action there. They're going to play a real kick heavy game, so he'll be much more tested, I think, if he ends up starting at Twickenham. But yeah, I was very impressed with how he played.
Yeah, I'm also impressed, and we said this before, but the quality that we have on our bench, what we can bring on compared to what other sides at international level can do, especially in that back row area. You put out a back row that's dominant. They play 60 minutes, maybe slightly less, for the most part. And then you bring on a back row that just adds to that and lifts it up to a level again. Like that's our biggest threat, I think, at the moment, our biggest strength.
Oh yeah, like the decision to go 6-2, it's funny because it was talked about so much at the World Cup in terms of South Africa, but I wouldn't underestimate how big a sea change it is from an Irish perspective. Like, we've never done that in, I don't think, the history of like Irish rugby until the French game, and now it looks like it's a real live option, because when you have the caliber of forwards that we have in reserve, you're talking about, you know, so you said Jack Cohn and Ryan Baird and say James Ryan coming on as the back kind of five of the scrum, they all do different functions really, really well. Like, James Ryan is that classic kind of second row workhorse who gets through a huge amount there. Jack Cohn is real powerful, real dynamic ball carrier, and then Baird is kind of this like all action guy who can like chase kickoffs, make big breaks, really good at the line out. They all offer something different, so it's going to be really interesting to see for the England game. You know, Gary Ringrose is fit. Does he bring back Gary Ringrose as a number 23 and go with a traditional 5-3 split, or does he leave Gary Ringrose out, which would be a huge call, and go with the pack that we've seen? That would be my preference. I think going to Twickenham, having that extra bit of beef on the bench, extra bit of power and ballast to come in the second half if it is a tight game, would be huge. Like, relieving a Ringrose is a big call, but I think he's been injured. The guys who were there have been playing well. I think they deserve that. But I don't know what you think. Obviously, having played forward at international level, like, are you a fan of what Ireland have done with that 6-2, especially with the quality that we have there?
Yeah, I think it works very well. I mean, if all failed, let's say, I believe there's a forward or two in that pack that could find their way into a backline and do a job, because the likelihood of it being for a long period of time is slim. So you know you might have to close out 10 minutes of a game or 15 minutes where some forward might have to slot into a back position if we were to have some really bad injuries throughout the game, let's say. But it's unlikely. You know, again, you might want to manage it if you had some injury concerns going in the back line. You might want to maybe put a third back on that bench. But for the most part, yeah, I am a fan of it. And to be honest with you, the way the forwards are playing these days, they're interacting so much in that back line and doing switch around plays and wrap plays and their ability to pass. Like I said to you, it doesn't look sometimes like there's forwards in that back line when they are actually forwards.
Yeah, and also just on the stick, like, you know, Kieran Fry, that's where he does come in really handy because of that versatility. Yes. Because if he can cover out half, he can cover 12, he can probably cover 13 in a pinch, or you can move the 12 to 13, he can cover 15. So, like, you're pretty well stocked as with Kieran Frawley as your man in the number 23 jersey. So it gives you the leeway to leave Gary Ringrose out. And when Robbie Henshaw and Bundy Aki have been playing so well, I would not break that centre partnership up. So I think, unfortunately for Gary, his injury came at a bad time, and he might not. So maybe the Scotland game might be a game where you don't need the 6-2 and you could bring him back in for that little bit of dynamism in the second half. Mm. But I think for the England game, I think I like the 23 as it is at the moment. Unless if you go Keenan and said he would go back in.
Yeah, funny. I don't know. I think that'll be a tight call. Robbie Henshaw's been playing amazingly well. I wouldn't be surprised though if they went with putting Ringrose back if he comes up to standard in training, you know, because against England they might just be looking for something a little bit more creative. And speaking of which, we're hearing a lot about this blitz defence and all the different things England are going to bring to it, England being our next crucial game. And a lot of people seem to have this thing in their head about that's going to be the banana skin and they're waiting in the long grass and all the usual stuff that you hear about England. I don't have that feeling. I actually think we're going to take care of England by 15 to 20 points. Maybe I'm being very, very rosed into glasses and pro-Irish.
No, I agree with you. I think they've been absolutely brutal in their three matches. It's funny, they were 2-for-2, and I was saying I think they'll lose their last three games. I just don't see them being close to Scotland, England, or even a bad France team in Paris. I think they've been terrible. It's funny, just like listening to the stuff coming out of the England camp, it's all propaganda. It's all like at odds with what I'm actually watching on the pitch. The new England, the progressive England, wanting to do this, wanting to do that. But then you watch them play, and they're just like, the Scotland performance was terrible. Like, the handling errors were off the charts. They were disconnected defensively, and I understand they're bringing in a new defensive system, so that piece I have a little sympathy for, but it was the basic skills that were so atrocious that I just thought this is just not good enough. And, like, you know, they're going with George Ford. He plays the Borthwick game plan as is traditionally, you know, he likes to go with. And then there's talk of the new England, and I just think they're all over the place. I agree with you. I would be very, very surprised if Ireland were beaten, because it would take Ireland playing so badly for this England team, I think, to play well enough to beat Ireland as is currently constituted. Like, Twickenham is a difficult place to go, but if you look at their record in the last 2 or 3 years there, they've lost to Fiji, they lost to Argentina, a record home defeat to France. Ireland have beaten them there. You know, they beat them by about 15 points or so. Scotland have beaten them there twice in a row. So the idea that it's still this fortress is just not borne out by the facts. Whereas the Aviva is the real fortress in Six Nations these days. So I agree with you. It's actually a massive tournament for Borthwick as well. I don't think he's going to be ousted, but if they lose again their last three games, which was what I would say is likely at this stage, that'll be back-to-back years with only 2 wins from 3. He's blessed that he had that handy World Cup draw to walk into, because if they had an anyway regular draw, they would have been turfed out of quarter-final stage and beaten, I think, well. They got close to beating South Africa in a torrential rain deluge that, like, really equalised the match. So I think that masked how bad they actually were at that World Cup, where they laboured through a weak pool. So I don't see them going anywhere under Steve Borthwick. I think his style of play is at odds with what the English public want and what the players seem to want to do too. I just don't see that ending well. So I'd be fascinated to see if they can race their game for Ireland. I think it'll be the opposite. I agree with you. I think a double-digit Ireland win.
Yeah, and I don't think Borthwick is going to survive, is my opinion on it as well, but we'll see how that unfolds. Okay, last night, Munster. I have to say, I thought they were going to hammer Zebre, and they got the job done very well. They were 40 points to 10 up at one stage. I thought they were going to pull away then. I think maybe that Roundtree will be a bit disappointed that they let in as many scores as they did at the end. They ended up 45-29 or something like that. But they leaked a few scores there that they shouldn't have and was un-Munster-like. But there were good performances throughout it as well, don't get me wrong. But sort of a mixed feelings about the way they finished the game.
Oh yeah, I think Graham Rowntree will be furious, to be honest. Because on paper, like, that should have been a 40-point win, and that's what they had put themselves in a position to do. As you said, I think they were 40-10 up or something. And then to concede 3 tries to Zebre in the second half.
It's time to turn our attention to GA now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Sean Lane. Morning, Sean, how are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you doing?
Ah, doing great. We're nice and warm in here in the studio because we got a bit cold yesterday, but we're all good and back. Looking forward to another great weekend of sport. Hopefully, not too affected by the bad weather. Yeah. We've had three rounds of the Hurling League and a few key games, I suppose, in Division 1A. Two big games in that division: Cork and Waterford and Wexford and Clare. What did you make of them?
Yeah, Reggie, Division 1A is the place to be. Kilkenny are 5 points from three games and Clare 5 points from three games. But a really interesting kind of relegation piece going on at the other end, and I watched both games from start to finish. And certainly if I take the Cork game first, I mean, this was a real relegation game. Waterford were 2 points, Cork were none. A Waterford win would definitely have put Cork playing in Division 1B next year. But Pat Ryan would be very happy. They came out on the right side, 121 to 119. I've seen the best goal so far this year, Jack O'Connor. He must have ran. You and me would never have caught him anyway, Reggie, in our day. But he must have ran 90 yards with the ball in his hurley and stuck the ball in the bottom corner. So he came up with 1-3. The usual suspects then, Patrick Horgan got 7 points, and Seamus Harnedy 2 with Brian Hayes 3. So that kind of puts both teams on 2 points apiece. Davy Fitz, he'll be disappointed probably with the way they played, Reggie, for 50 minutes. But when they went about 8 points down after the Jack O'Connor goal, Jack Prendergast, Callum Lyons all came to the fore, and Waterford really put it up to them and made a tremendous battle of it in the end. So where it leaves it, Reggie, with those two teams, both of them actually have to play Wexford. Wexford are on 3 points. Cork and Waterford are both on 2. So there's going to be some real, real crackers of really whoever loses games, will probably be playing 1B, and no one will want to do that. The other game was as tight, Reggie, Clare and Waterford, Wexford, or Clare and Wexford. Wexford were at home, and Seamus Casey goal making up the 113, Clare on 16 points. Wexford will be happy. Keith Rossiter, I've never seen it, Reggie. Three hurling games in the National League. Wexford have drawn all three. So they'll be happy with that. They will need another result either against Cork or Waterford to stay in 1A. So again, as I said earlier, that will be a cracker of a game. But Brian Lohan will be happy. He's three played and he's 5 points, the same as Kilkenny. John Conlon was back. I mentioned it last day with Liam Dunn last week that John Conlon wasn't playing, but he was back at six. David Fitzgerald played and scored 5 points. So they're still top of Division 1A, joint top with Kilkenny, but we still haven't seen Tony Kelly and Shane O'Donnell. So they're going to be very, very hard to beat, Reggie, when they do get them back. And they're my tip to probably win the league anyway, for starters, and to do very well in Munster. You certainly get to a Munster final.
Okay, well, we'll take that on board. In the other division, Limerick were too strong for Dublin. Were you at that?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. I was, Reggie, and I'm 50 years following the old Dubs in the hurling, and it wasn't a good day, but I want to try, and Dublin have been shifting a lot of criticism after the game, and indeed the game against Antrim, which they won. People said that Antrim should have won it, and perhaps they should have, but they didn't. On the day, look, Limerick scored 3-20, Reggie. Far stronger, particularly in the second half. The big lads for Limerick, Dermot Bourne, Kyle Hayes, Tom Morrissey, Will O'Donoghue, all stood up and really gave an exhibition, particularly the second half. And, you could really strongly argue that we're only at 90% or 85%. From a Dublin point of view, and I suppose we've a lot of listeners, from the big clubs around Dublin listening, there were some positives. One, we scored 118, Cork against the All-Ireland champions. Cork got 121 and people thought they played out of their skin. Dublin had four really crystal clear goal chances, took one, brilliant save for another, and two balls just went, one went over the bar and one tailed off wide. So, that's positives. But equally, Chris Crummy and Donald Burke were back, Reggie, two smashing players. Didn't play well, but it was their first game, probably Chris's first game in a year and a half, and Donald had a serious injury. Owen O'Donnell still has to come back. I was very, very happy with the form of Danny Sutcliffe. He got 4 points off his left and off his right. So there is a lot of things to look forward to, but it was a really bad night for Dublin Hurling, Reggie. There's no hiding away from that. They have two games left now, Dublin. They're away to Galway, and I just want to say something before I go any further. The Friends of Dublin Hurling were on to me, and they want a bus departing next Sunday Which is tomorrow week, to play Galway, meeting at 10 o'clock in Connolly Station and moving a second stop at 10:20 in Lucan Spa. So anybody wants to book a ticket, try and book it before Friday, 087-720-5887. But yes, a bad night for Dublin, but hopefully there's a couple of good games coming Galway away, and then we've Westmead at home.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, hopefully things will start to improve in those matches. In the women's football, I see there's a huge game, top of the table clash, Armagh against Kerry.
Yeah, and I was going to say this, we haven't been fair to Armagh, so I better contradict myself before I say it. I haven't been fair to Armagh. I tipped Armagh to be beaten by Cork down in Cork. They beat Cork. I tipped Meath to beat Armagh last week. Armagh went down the last day, Reggie, and Meath were in really good form, but they beat Meath 2-12 to 8 points. Two girls really stood out, Amy Mackin and Kelly Mallon. They both scored 1-4 each, Reggie, out of a total of 2-12. But for their prize, when you're at the top of the table, they have a huge game this weekend. The other unbeaten side in the ladies' Division 1 is Kerry. Have been good form. I saw them against Dublin, but they weren't great the last day out. They were 8-5 up against Mayo, Liam McHale's Mayo team, but Mayo came back and got the last 3 points, so they only drew the game. But they had inspiring displays from Anna Galvin and Louise Nimir-Hertig. I'm going to be a death wish now on Armagh, and I'm actually going to tip Armagh to win this one and go joint to go atop on Division 1. It's an achievement in itself, Reggie, because they won Division 2 last year, and if they win tomorrow 1 o'clock in Armagh, they'll have be top on their own and looking likely to reach a league final.
Excellent stuff, Sean. Okay, well, there's certainly plenty there for us to look forward to, and thanks for giving us all of the details on that, and we'll catch up with you again next week when you'll be back in studio.
I will, Reggie. Take care of yourselves.
Take care. All the best. That's Sean Lane there giving us all of the update. As he says, he's going to tip Armagh. He doesn't particularly want to give the kiss of death to them, but thinks that they'll be doing well in the women's. And disappointment last week for the Dublin Hurlers. There's no question about it. It was one of those games that didn't go their way, let's say, but they certainly didn't. They weren't found lacking. They gave it everything that they could, and they'll bounce back from that, no doubt. And I want to turn our attention to the football now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Brian Talty. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Morning, Rich. How are you?
Oh, never better. Never better. Looking forward to a good weekend of sport, as I say. But no shortage of it in the football, that's for sure. Some juicy encounters. I suppose we'd start with Derry against Dublin. That's one many would be looking forward to, and I doubt you will yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I suppose the two form teams now at the moment, to be honest with you, Reggie, you know, my tips last week weren't great. You know, it must have been a bit distracted or something like that. But you know, from week to week, the form is changing. It's up and down, and teams have to have responses to the week before and so on. So, but these two teams, like, these are the teams that are absolutely flying in Division 1, and it'll be an interesting game. I really thought, you know, that Derry weren't great against Galway. You know, it was a very understrength Galway team. All our all-stars weren't playing and so on, but Derry got a lucky enough penalty and a lucky enough goal. So I wasn't that impressed against Galway, but, like, they've been the form team and they've been consistent all through, and Mickey Hart would really want to win this game. So, and with the Dubs, you know, flying the last day, they were really Kerry just wiped Kerry off the field. I was absolutely surprised at that one.
Yeah, and what do you think Mickey Hart will be trying to target with them to try and get that result? I mean, it's hard to unpick that defence and the way that they play. Where would he go after, do you think?
Well, if you look at it last week, Reggie, I just felt that Kerry were so naive tactically. Like, they never put a man marker on Brian Fenton in the middle of the field. They never put anybody back in front of Conor Callaghan, you know, to sweep in front of him. And then they left David Clifford up front all by himself. But that won't happen with Mickey Hart. I think what he'll be doing, he'll be pulling Kieran McFaul back in front of Conor Callaghan. He will certainly have a man marker on Brian Fenton around the middle of the field. And that's the great battle we're looking forward to, is the middle of the field with Conor Glass and Rogers against Fenton and probably O'Coffey Byrne, who did quite well the last day, you know. So I think Mickey will be shoring it up defensively. and then like their forward line, they have a massive forward line. So, but they actually do attack from their half back line. They've got an awful lot of scores from their half backs. I think they've scored 4 goals in the last few games from the half back line. So I think he'd be trying to push forward. He'd be trying to put Dublin under pressure by attacking them more than trying to defend against them. But he won't be as naive as Kerry were last week.
Absolutely not. Okay, moving on to Mayo Roscommon in Castlebar. This is crucial, this Division 1 clash, and of course a bit of a relegation dogfight as well, so you can expect a bit of a home dinger for that one.
Well, when Roscommon and Mayo play, there's always a humdinger, and you know yourself with your Galway connections, it's the same when Galway, Mayo, Roscommon play. So this is going to be an interesting one. But you know, you're looking at Mayo, like they were absolutely disastrous in the second half against Tyrone on the last day. Like two forwards, like Derek Canavan and McCurry, just destroyed them, which is surprising for Mayo, to be honest with you, because normally defensively they're very, very tight. Now if they're like that, then, against Roscommon have a huge forward line, some great players like Ben O'Carroll, you know, Enda Smith, Donny Smith. These fellas will destroy you if you don't actually mark them up. So Roscommon are coming good, and they have a really good forward line, as I say. They're also getting very strong, and Alton Harnedy is back, and I think Tiger O'Rourke, or their two midfielders from last year, are back in the mix again. So it's going to be a big one for Mayo, because you know, Kevin has to win this game. As you say, it's a relegation battle, but Mayo have the talent. But I just have a slight feeling that with the forward line that Roscommon have and the guys they have to bring in from the subs, they could win that game. But Mayo have gone with a strong forward line. Aidan O'Shea is back again as a target man, and Ryan O'Donoghue is back at corner forward, who's one of their best forwards. So it could be a humdinger, as you say. I have a slight feeling that the Rossies might just win that one.
Okay, that's an interesting call. We'll have to watch that one closely.
It's always tight between them, to be honest with you. But you know, I think Davy Burke is a shrewd operator. And the other thing I'm thinking is, Kevin McStay, after last year winning the league, does he want to win it this year? Like, he made 8 changes to the last day, and he's gone again with about 5 changes this time. So is he trying to give fellas a run, trying to build his panel? I think Davy would be more keen to actually win this game, because both of them need to win it. But so that makes it interesting, and that will make it a tight game.
I'm looking forward to that one now, I have to say.
yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned Kerry being naive, and probably, you know, they're just not firing. That's the way to say it, I suppose. And it's not going to get any easier against Tyrone in Fitzgerald Stadium on Sunday. So what do they need to do? What do they need to improve on?
Well, certainly, like, I thought their teamwork was very poor the last day, and I thought they looked, you know, fitness-wise, stuck to the ground, whether they're in heavy training at the moment or whatever. But they wouldn't do that against Dublin. They'd always come prepared for the Dublin game. They just couldn't respond to what Dublin did, and Dublin held the ball so well and didn't allow Kerry to have the ball. So Tyrone would play a similar kind of a game as well, because they keep possession of the ball. But we'd be wondering now for this game, to be honest with you, Reggie, which Kerry team is going to turn up and which Tyrone team is going to turn up. So, I mean, Tyrone were very poor in the first half, and then they brought on Darren McCurry, and God, he changed the game, and they were fabulous. Between himself, Darren McCurry, and Derek Canavan, they just destroyed Mayo the last day. So Kerry will have to have the man markers in there. I see they've brought Paul Murphy back into corner four, probably to mark Derek Canavan. So they need to tighten up on their defence, and they need to actually get a sweeper back there as well, because this is a really good forward line that Tyrone have if they get them going, you know. So and then the other thing, Reg, is the middle of the field. Like, they're trying to get a midfield, and you know, the two O'Connors, Dermot O'Connor and Joe O'Connor, good classy footballers, but when they need a man marker, they didn't have one. Like, they used to have Jack Parry in the middle of the field, and he never gave Brian Fenton a kick. But they may have a little bit more room today, you know, against Tyrone. So they're good footballers. I think Joe O'Connor scored 1-1 the last day, you know, with a Kerry team playing poorly. But and I think probably get more support for David Clifford. Like, they expect David Clifford to do everything. Yeah. Like, they put the ball up to him, they expect him to catch it, they expect him to turn to score every time. The support play for David Clifford and Sean O'Shea up front was poor, so they need to work on that. So I think maybe dominance around the middle of the field, shore up the defence, and more support and more teamwork up front.
Yeah, they're only short of getting David Clifford to wash the jerseys afterwards.
Exactly, and they expect him to come back into the middle of the field to catch the ball and be back defensive and everything like that. But I just always feel that he's up there and he's left by himself, and you know, there's no support. Now, I do think he probably is a brilliant, brilliant footballer, Reggie, but he might be selfish with the ball. Do you know what I mean? Like, and there's nobody running off him, nobody supporting him. I think if they get that going, like, he's such a massive player, like, it would make a huge difference to Kerry.
Okay, absolutely. Okay, well, briefly, Brian, because I'm running out of time, Monaghan started off great, win against the Dubs. Kerry, Derry and Roscommon beat them, so they're bottom of the table. Galway going up to Clonus. We're expecting a Galway win, but Monaghan are not a bad team.
Look, there's a great survivors in Division 1 football, to be honest with you. I was impressed with Galway the last day, to be honest, considering the number of players that they're missing. And Pádraig Jai seems to be looking further down the road by bringing in a lot of the young lads, and a lot of those young lads have played really well. They will be up against it. Monaghan always put up a huge fight up in Clonus. I'm still thinking, looking at the way the Galway played last week, that Galway could pull this one, because Monaghan are missing a lot of their players as well as Galway. So it's like as if there's two second teams going out against each other. But just impressed with some of the newcomers to the Galway scene the last day, and just hoping that they will lift it up again and drive on and get a win there, because certainly we need one.
Time to talk to the one and only Alan Cawley now. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm great, Reggie. How are you?
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, there's a few games suffered with the weather. Rovers, Drogheda, Bohemians, Dundalk, but a couple managed to get through as well. So Derry City getting a pretty decent last minute or into injury time winner against St. Pat's to win 2-1. Pat's will be sick with that.
Yeah, Reggie, I was hit by the weather myself last night, so I didn't get to Daly Mount, so I had to come home and watch it. Not a bad second prize, to be fair. The game was on the telly, so it was good that we saw St. Pat's and Derry. And as you say, a massive win for Derry City. I know it's only early in the season, but it almost felt like such a big goal, even at such an early stage, when you're playing against one of your rivals. You're 1-0 down. You didn't really play well on the night. It took them a couple of substitutions, really, for them to liven up when they fell a goal behind Derry. But it was a massive goal then by the substitute Mullen when he came on, especially when you think that they're playing Shamrock Rovers on Monday night, and if they were going into that off the back of maybe a disappointing performance and only a draw, their heads may have been down, but now they'll bounce into that game on Monday night because of the late goal, and such a brilliant time to score, as we know, when it is an injury time like that. So I'm sure Rory Higgins will be over the moon. John Daly will be disappointed. Pat's actually played quite well on the night, and they were just caught with two sucker punch goals, really, because they never really looked in any danger, or wasn't like Derry were peppering the goal. It wasn't a great game either, I must add, to be honest with you, Reggie. But from Derry's point of view, scoring so late on against one of your rivals, and with Shamrock Rovers to come, it's a big, big win.
Absolutely, and another win as well. Shelburne, should I say, away to Sligo, an important one, and not easy to go to Sligo and win, but it is a good result, and they'll be very happy with that one.
Oh, massive result. Absolutely massive, Reggie. And they've had a great start to the season. And it was so important to follow up, I suppose, the victory over Shamrock Rovers last week, which is a great one. It would have been no good then if you were only to pick up maybe a draw or a defeat away to Sligo. And I know, as you say, it is a difficult place to go, and especially the weather conditions the way they were yesterday. So for them to go down to Sligo and pick up the victory as well and follow up on that win last week, a huge result. And they're facing Galway now on Monday night, the other form team, I suppose, in the league at the moment. Galway picked up a good victory last night, but it's been a brilliant start for Shelburne and for Damien Duff's team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you did mention that was a good win for Galway against Waterford, two teams who might have been fairly evenly matched, but 2-1 was the result there, a home victory. And you're impressed with how Galway have started?
Yeah, they've gone very well, especially the fact that obviously they've come up. Now, they are full-time, so they have good resources, fitness, all that kind of stuff. They should be well up to speed with the Premier Division teams. It's not like they're coming up as a part-time team, but they've done very well because there is a gap, and themselves and Waterford have acquitted themselves really, really well. I know that game was against Waterford last night. They'll be disappointed, but they've actually started the season quite well too. But Galway will be over the moon with the start that they've had, a couple of victories and a big one at home as well. It's so important. Your home form is good. good, Reggie, because that can carry us so far, especially when your team that's just been promoted. So it's important that their home form is good, and that was a good victory for them last night as well. So yeah, it'll be a big game. I'm going down to that one on Monday night in Talca, Shelburne against Galway. As I say, the two foreign teams, there's a massive game in Tallaght with Derry and Shamrock Rovers. They need to get back on track. Shamrock Rovers themselves have had a slow start by their standards, but the start of the season slow last year, Reggie, and we all know what happened after that.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on to the international scene, because we've talked about it many times before. Some news during the week, stuff that is probably confusing for a lot of fans as well, and punters too, probably, and pundits, should I say, too. John O'Shea announced as the interim manager with a good support staff around him. You know, Glenn Whelan being involved, McCarthy and Brian Kerr now being brought in, as I was saying to Ken earlier, almost as a director of football role, it seems to me, as a technical advisor. What do you make of it all, and where it all stands with O'Shea coming in as the interim manager?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's a good look in terms of the chase so far after a new manager, Reggie. And obviously, we all thought Lee Carsley was going to get it. Seemed to be their number one target. They interviewed a couple of others as well. And then there was the U-turn from Carsley, and they were left with a little bit of egg on their face. Now, I still think they're pursuing the Carsley thing. But in the meantime, as you say, John O'Shea has been appointed. Now, this could have been done weeks ago, because John O'Shea was part of the previous regime and the previous staff. And he could have come in there with that in mind, thinking John could come in as an interim manager, announce it a few weeks ago just to clear up the mess, and they could have been doing their business behind the scenes if that was the case. But the fact that it's been played out in public hasn't looked great on them. Now that John is in place, I'd have no issue with that whatsoever. I think he's been a brilliant servant for Irish football. Obviously, he's very likeable, John. He is brilliant respect amongst his peers and amongst other players and people around the country as well, because he's performed so well over the years with such a brilliant club like Manchester United, and then obviously with Ireland. So I've no problem with John coming in. The backroom team, as you say, that he's brought in with him, people are probably thinking, is there much need for that, because it's only a couple of games? But I'd have no issue, Reggie, if they were to come in, do well, and to stay that way, because I hold John O'Shea in the highest regard.
What's you mentioned the fan Brian reaction Kerr's come in to that, Alan? What are you hearing on the ground?
I don't think they have much of an issue with John O'Shea. I think it's just the way that it's played out, in the sense that if they are bringing in a backroom team like they are, people are saying to me, well, what's the point in bringing in a backroom team if it's only for two games? Now, we don't know if it's only for two games. They're still maintaining that come April they'll be making a permanent appointment. But if John O'Shea was to come in and do really well in the two games, would people be too upset if he was to get the job permanently? I don't think so, Reggie, to be honest with you. And I'd have no qualms with that whatsoever, because people will point to his inexperience, if you like, as a manager. And of course, we know that he doesn't have any, but he's had a stellar career. That doesn't necessarily mean he'd be a good manager, but we won't know how he would get on until we'd see him as a manager. But and also, sometimes you need a chance.
Also, with Brian Kerr there advising him, maybe, you know, as a director role, that might work very nicely. And he could concentrate then on the football and the coaching, and have Brian doing the more technical side of stuff.
Yeah, and absolutely. And that's why, coming to Brian now, people are being a bit kind of taking it up wrong, in the sense, almost feeling like Brian's been brought in as the manager. Brian is only in to support John. And as you say, in that advisory role, if you like, technical or whatever title you want to put on it. Yeah. But John and Brian have a brilliant relationship, like Brian has with all the former players that he plays with. And I'd have a personal relationship with Brian, and I'd hold him in the highest regard as well. Mm. And he only wants something good for Irish football. He's been ostracised for far too long, Reggie, out of Irish football. And it's not good when you have someone of the calibre of Brian Kerr, with the knowledge that he has, been ostracised for such a long time.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend. Ha ha ha.